and good evening. I'm Dave Thompson. The North Dakota Broadcasters Association welcomes you to this U.S. Senate debate. Our candidates are Democratic Senator Heidi Heitkamp. And here is her Republican challenger, Congressman Kevin Cramer. The rules of this debate are very simple. The candidates will not have opening or closing statements. Each candidate will be given 1 minute to answer the question, and each will be given a 30-second rebuttal. The order was chosen by a coin flip, and Senator Heitkamp goes first. Our first question. Over the past few days, the issue of civility in our political discourse has come front and center because of pipe bomb-like devices to certain politicals and the news media. As a senator or a candidate, how do you cool down the overheated rhetoric without violating a person's First Amendment rights?
You know, I take my advice and my signal from a great American patriot, Representative Steve Scalise. And you might remember him. He is the Republican legislator who was shot down at a baseball practice field. I watched him at the prayer breakfast as he stood at the podium, and he was gunned down by a Democratic partisan. He never once mentioned Democratic politics. He talked about his faith. He talked about his friends on both sides of the aisle who helped him through it. And so looking at that as an example, I think the message couldn't be clearer. We all need to quit blaming. There's only one person responsible for what happened here, and that's the man who put those bombs into those envelopes. But what we have to do is we have to be accountable for our words. We have to understand that words matter and that we have to reflect the goodness of America in how we conduct our business in the United States Senate.
Congressman Kevin Cramer, the same question to you.
Well, first of all, I would associate myself with everything that Senator Heitkamp has said. And I would also say what I say many times in Washington, that is, let's look to North Dakota as the example. And what we get to do tonight is actually celebrate civility. We actually get to celebrate the great American experiment that provides opportunities like this. So it's a great first question for a night like this, and I'm looking forward to both of us living up to it.
Would you like 30 seconds?
Other than to say that we all have a choice. We make a choice every day. And when we make the right choice and it reflects the values, the message that's sent to our kids, the message that is sent to our constituents is that we know how to conduct business and that we all are going to move together. We may agree and we may disagree, but we're going to move together for the betterment of our country and our state.
Last word on this question to Congressman Cramer.
I couldn't improve on what's been said.
Okay. The next question then goes to Congressman Kevin Cramer. We are going to rotate these as we go along tonight. The president has announced the ending of a nuclear treaty with Russia, something President Reagan signed with then-Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. The president accuses Russia of cheating. Do you support the ending of this treaty? Why or why not?
You know, Dave, to be honest, at a personal level, I really think that the president is, he might be acting a little bit prematurely, quite honestly. But I will say this, I think it's quite common knowledge. It's been stated by NATO, it's been stated certainly by previous presidents, including recent previous presidents, that Russia's been cheating. One thing we know about Donald Trump, he doesn't like cheaters, and he is not afraid to confront them. One of the problems we have is that previous presidents in lots of areas have failed to confront these situations, whether it's Russia, whether it's China cheating on trade deals, whether it's North Korea. It's this president confronts the issues when it happens. It's too bad that it wasn't confronted earlier. So personally, I'd take a more measured, slower approach. But if the commander-in-chief of our country says he wants to do it this way, I'm going to support him.
Senator Heitkamp.
I think we all know that Russia has been pushing the envelope and gradually moving towards building that short-range capability, which is exactly in conflict with the treaty that they signed. And so it is time, as the president has acknowledged, to call it out and say that you are cheating and we're going to do something about it. Again, one of the concerns that I always have is it gets taken to the extreme. So now we're going to pull out of the treaty instead of reopening a discussion and making sure that we're verifying what is actually happening, calling them out, and using all diplomatic measures to enforce the treaty before you threaten withdrawal. And that's the challenge that we have. But I applaud the president for calling out Putin for cheating. He clearly has been doing it. I think it represents a very serious threat to our national security and the security of the region that Russia exists in.
Congressman Kramer, would you like a rebuttal?
Yeah, well, I would just add to that that this president calls him out, but he also throws up consequences. And while we sometimes think that seems like extreme rhetoric, the reality is that he doesn't make empty threats. And our allies and our adversaries alike understand that. So he's doing what I think he thinks he has to do to bring Russia back into compliance, and compliance should be the goal.
Senator Heitkamp, last word.
I think this is exactly right. I think the president challenges and then goes to the extreme. And when you go to the extreme, sometimes things happen, like a trade war that was unintended, that really affects our ability to market our soybeans, our ability to be profitable on the farm. It goes to the extreme, and we lose allies in Europe, and all of a sudden we're in trade wars that we shouldn't be in. And so I think a measured response is the right direction. A clear direction for our national security is exactly what we should be doing. But we have to be measured in what we do.
All right, our next question goes to Senator Heitkamp. May I ask the audience to please refrain, if you can, from applause and hold it till the end? Thank you. Senator Heitkamp, our relations with Saudi Arabia may have been frayed by the murder of a New York Times columnist, but has summoned Congress calling for sanctions against that country. Do we need to impose sanctions, or is there something else the U.S. should do in this situation?
I don't think it could be clearer that we absolutely need to take direct and immediate action against the Crown Prince. I think that we have been lied to repeatedly about what actually happened. I think the president knows that. I think certainly the head of the CIA knows it, and the Turks know it. And if we do not immediately react in a way that has consequences for Saudi Arabia, what's the message to the rest of the world? That you can take an American-based reporter and brutalize him and murder him, and there's no consequences for what? Because we might make some money on an arms deal? Is that who we are as a country? We need to stand for real purpose here. We need to stand and make sure that our enemies and our allies know that we still believe in the rule of law, we still believe in human rights, and we still believe in the First Amendment.
Congressman Kramer.
Well, Dave, as you know, we have one really good ally in the Middle East, and that's Israel. Everyone else is varying degrees of adversaries, and we find ourselves in the Middle East oftentimes aligning ourselves with people who are less bad than other people, and as a result, we end up in these circumstances. I don't disagree with what Senator Heitkamp has said. I do think it's interesting and ironic that in this question, the answer is the president has taken a measured approach to it, but there's plenty of evidence that's stacking up, obviously. But we also can't just go into it willy-nilly. We need to make sure the rest of our allies are in sync with us, and then there's no question, whether it's sanctions of whatever type, they need to be severe, and they need to send a strong signal both to Saudi Arabia and to others in the region and around the world, quite frankly.
Senator Heitkamp, 30
You know,
seconds.
Let's not kid ourselves about Saudi Arabia. Most of the 9/11 bombers came from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is engaged in a brutalized war in Yemen, We have to be eyes wide open. And for too long, we've been held hostage by something called oil. And now because of the shale revolution, we don't have to play that game for energy security. We can play the game for regional security and for the rule of law and the appropriate diplomatic response.
Last word, Congressman Kramer.
Well, I would just add to that we do have something that we haven't always had, and that is leverage in the energy area. Remembering that one of the most common things we do have with Saudi Arabia is a common enemy of Iran. And so when the Iran nuclear deal was approved and they were allowed to sell their oil into the global market, we entered into a whole new relationship in that part of the world. So it's complicated to be sure. But by and large, I don't disagree with what Senator Heitkamp is saying.
Our next question goes to Congressman Kramer first. Immigration policy continues to be a big issue, especially with reports of a caravan of refugees from Central America mm-hmm. coming toward our border. What do you think should be in a policy for immigration?
Well, immigration is a very broad statement, a very broad policy arena that deals with both legal and illegal immigration. And we have problems on both sides of it. I thought the president was very magnanimous when he presented his four pillars that dealt with eliminating chain migration, when he talked about replacing the lottery system with a merit-based system. He was very generous, I thought, in providing a path to citizenship for 1.8 million DACA immigrants. And then I just think that we try to do things big and comprehensive, and there's always something over here that the people over here don't like, and there's always something over here that the people over here don't like. And I think this president has provided a pretty good blueprint for dealing at least with a good part of it. But at the end of the day, we are a sovereign nation with rule of law, the most generous nation in the world when it comes to legal immigrants, and we ought to have something to say about who comes into our country. And I think a merit-based system would be a good place to start.
Senator Heitkamp.
In 2013, we passed comprehensive immigration reform with a broad bipartisan majority. 68, 69 senators voted for it. Senator Hoeven and I both supporting it. We were unable to get anything done over in the House of Representatives because that would have provided a long-term path to citizenship. Not acceptable to the House of Representatives, so this issue in a big way lingers. So the president did present four pillars, and guess who voted for it? I did. Guess who didn't vote for it? Half the Republican caucus in the Senate, because they couldn't agree. And so it's time for leadership, and it's time for bipartisan leadership. It's time to reignite this. But the one thing we know, we cannot leave our borders unprotected. The rule of law has to be imposed. We have to make sure if there's 4,000 today, there's going to be a million tomorrow. And we have to stand at the border and say our sovereignty depends on border security and border protection.
Congressman Kramer, 30-second rebuttal.
Well, I agree with that rhetoric, but we have to build that wall and then secure the other parts of the border with vessels, with aircraft, with technology, with the National Guard at the border personnel as well. So that was, by the way, the fourth pillar of the president's four pillars. So, yeah, we need to protect our sovereignty, but we also have to eliminate this crazy notion that we're going to fund sanctuary cities and create a magnet for illegal immigration to come to the United States. And I've opposed that. That's an area where Senator Heitkamp and I disagree. She's voted for funding sanctuary cities. I've voted against funding sanctuary cities.
And Senator Heitkamp.
I voted four times to build a wall. Not a wall that goes all the way across. No one even believes that that's possible. But to make sure that we have the kind of technology and security that we need, the smart way, doing it the right way. But where we are right now with all of this is we're at a political impasse because people refuse to work across the aisle. That's not my history. I have a strong history on border security. I have a strong history on going across the working across the aisle. And we will continue to make our border security an absolute priority in the United States Senate.
The next question goes to Senator Heitkamp first. The state of North Dakota is currently one of 20 states involved in a lawsuit that would dismantle the Affordable Care Act. It seems, depending on who you listen to, that the number of North Dakotans insured with pre-existing conditions covered by the ACA is either around 300,000 or some number significantly lower, and the Medicaid program could be impacted as well. Where do both of you stand on this lawsuit and how it might impact North Dakotans?
I think the lawsuit, like four votes to repeal the Affordable Care Act without a replacement plan, is irresponsible. And anyone who tells you that that somehow will protect the federal protections that prohibit you or an insurance company from taking away your insurance, they're wrong. That is clearly wrong. That's where the protection is. It's in the Affordable Care Act. When the Affordable Care Act is challenged and repealed, those protections go away. When this lawsuit is being defended by the administration on only one ground, that the patient protection provision is unconstitutional. That's the position of the administration in court. That's the position of the plaintiffs who have filed this lawsuit. This lawsuit clearly affects patient protections, including our pre-existing conditions. We know better. We know that we need to fix the healthcare system without throwing people off their health insurance.
Congressman Kramer.
Well, first of all, she's right about one thing. We know better here in North Dakota, which is why the plans I've supported take the money, send it to the states, and put the states in charge. I mean, John Gottfried, our insurance commissioner, is in here today. If you want to ask him about what's the better plan, talk to him. He could tell you. In fact, our governor supports the Republican plan, our lieutenant governor, our attorney general, the insurance commissioner, the congressman, the other senator. I'm pretty sure Heidi Heitkamp's not the smartest person out of that whole group and the only one that's right.
Senator Heitkamp, you have a chance to rebut.
Wait a minute. That counts against my time?
Yeah. You go ahead. Kevin, go ahead.
Okay.
Finish your thought.
My point is to test the constitutionality of a law is the responsible thing to do. That's what's being done here. We should all want to make sure that the law is constitutional. But the number that you talked about, here's the real number. 8% of North Dakotans, the same number of people that don't have insurance today were the same number that didn't have it before Obamacare. But 8% of the people are on the individual market, and 24% of them have pre-existing conditions. And if you do the math, that comes out to far less than 300,000, like more like 15,000.
Let's not fool ourselves. Let's just not fool ourselves. When you vote five times to repeal the Affordable Care Act, where that patient protection exists, you have voted to eliminate that patient protection. When you support a lawsuit where the sole purpose is to eliminate the protection for pre-existing conditions, you don't support protections for pre-existing conditions. And so make no mistake about it, there's no double talk. I hear the double talk's over there.
So the Republican bills that I've supported do guarantee emphatically, without any ambiguity whatsoever, people with pre-existing conditions. And by the way, the law back in the 1970s ensured people on group plans were protected, and the vast majority of people on group plans with insurance in North Dakota have group plans, or they're on some government program that takes us down to a very, very small number. So we need to deal with the facts. And then, yes, states can, in fact, provide the coverage for people with pre-existing conditions under the Republican health care plans that I support and Senator Heitkamp has opposed.
Yeah, can I just say something? He just mentioned all of the politicians, Republican politicians, who are supporting these plans. Guess who didn't? The North Dakota Hospital Association, the Physicians Association, all of the patient protections, AARP. There was not one group in North Dakota other than the Republican Party and the Republican Party officials who supported any of those plans for replacement.
Those officials who were elected by large margins by the people of North Dakota, not the associations, the people of North Dakota. And when you work for lobbyists instead of the patients, the people, the small businesses that hire people, that's when you start thinking groupthink like Chuck Schumer instead of like how people think, like the people I'm looking at out here.
Well, I mean, can
I'll
I just have one,
more,
Kevin?
One more bite at the apple.
One more bite at the apple. You're honestly saying that a governor and a congressman and a senator know more about providing health care than the Hospital Association and the Medical Association and the AARP who protects patients. That is ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. It's a partisan bill that's being promoted to promote a partisan reason, and you're taking away some of the critical health care that is essential for so many of North Dakotans, and that is a clear difference, Kevin, between you and me.
When who's gonna provide health insurance to my 30-some-year-old niece and her husband? He has a pre-existing condition. They can't afford the $1,500 a month premiums plus the $10,000 copay. Yeah. He can't even afford to buy his insulin. They have insurance they can't afford, and they darn sure can't afford to use it, and they can't afford to get sick.
Well, wait.
That's
wait,
as a result but of Obamacare.
Kevin, wait. Wait until it's repealed by this lawsuit and the protection that says you can't charge people more if they have a pre-existing condition kicks in. Because if they can't afford it today, they sure as heck are not going to be able to afford it tomorrow.
No, they actually could afford it before Obamacare made it impossible to afford it. He made it impossible to pay for, less choice, higher premium. The promise by President Obama was people's rates would go down, families down $2,500 a year. They went up $4,000 a year. That's not affordable. That's not access. That's checking the box and saying, I've got coverage I can't afford to use. There's got to be a better way than that.
20,000 people get their health insurance today. My husband's a family physician. He'll tell you at least 12 of his patients are alive today only because they got the screenings that were mandated by the Affordable Care Act. Let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. My history is trying to fix the Affordable Care Act. His history is trying to repeal it without a replacement. His history is trying to make it a political issue, which he's doing right now. My issue is rolling up my sleeves, working in a bipartisan way, doing everything that I can to make sure people have affordable health insurance. And I will continue to fight with my dying breath to make sure that pre-existing conditions are covered for our American and our North Dakota families.
As will I, as have I, as has every bill that I voted for to replace Obamacare. In fact, it provided more money and more flexibility to the states to do exactly what she said.
But Kevin, you have not explained why you voted 5 times to repeal it with no replacement.
Never mind that bill,
because...
I just did. Because no. The rates are skyrocketing, choice is diminishing.
But admit that when you voted to repeal it without a replacement, what happened? You took away the protections on pre-existing conditions.
No, because protections on pre-existing conditions have been there since the 1970s. And North Dakota, under Ed Schaefer, under Governor Ed Schaefer, had a plan to cover people in North Dakota. I trust the governors of North Dakota and our legislature way more than I trust CMS.
You trust the legislature more than the Hospital Association. I'm just telling you, go out and fact check it. It's been fact checked over and over again. Go out and read the lawsuit, which I read. Go out and read the lawsuit. The lawsuit that was filed, ladies and gentlemen, takes away everything. It takes away keeping your kids on their insurance. It takes away the lifetime caps. It takes away everything. It wipes out the Affordable Care Act. And so let's not double talk this. And if you're the one who said that people with pre-existing conditions would game the system. We have those words coming out of your mouth. That's not what this is about. This is about moms and dads trying to get critical health care for their kids. It's about grandpas and grandmas worrying about whether their kids will have an opportunity to get good quality health care. It's about keeping our rural hospitals open. This is such an important discussion. And let's admit, and I've said it over and over again, the Affordable Care Act has good parts and it has bad parts. I've been working to fix the bad. You've been trying to eliminate it for purely partisan reasons, because it's a great soundbite within a Republican administration, and we cannot play politics with our health care.
Well, let me tell you something.
This will be one more.
Sure. I spent most of my time trying to repeal it under the name Obama a Democratic president because none of the promises he made were kept by it because they couldn't be. It makes no sense whatsoever. And our plan that I've voted for a couple of times and will go to work on as soon as we get back, especially if I win this race, will be to do exactly the things that you talked about in the goals through a way that gives the authority and the flexibility to states who can do it better in conjunction with their hospitals and doctors.
Well, I'm going to move on now to another non-controversial.
Why would you want to do
that?
This is so fun.
This is fun.
This is a real debate.
This is what debate should be.
But this is another non-controversial subject. It has to do with Social Security.
And,
we're going to do Kevin Cramer first.
Sure.
You know, Americans work very hard and pay into Social Security with a paycheck.
Sure.
What is your position on strengthening Social Security for current and future generations?
Sure. Great question, because there's a big difference between current and future. For current recipients, nothing. Keep it as it is. Make sure, I would say, make sure that anybody that's currently getting Social Security benefits, and anybody that's, say, 55 and older, so that we aren't pulling the rug out from under them, changing the rules in the middle of the game. However, it's very important to understand that doing nothing means that in 2034, when it goes insolvent, there'll only be 75% of the money coming in that will be going out. That means an automatic 25% cut. I think we should put everything on the table, Dave. Everything. Including particularly including raising the cap on the income that is taxed for Social Security. I don't think we have to do it a lot, but if we do it a little now, the out years will create a lot more revenue and we'll be able to keep it alive longer for future generations.
Senator Heitkamp?
I think there is such a clear difference on Social Security and Medicare. Congressman Cramer has a long history of trying to privatize Social Security. He has a long history of voting for bills that would limit our ability to continue this system into the future. The single biggest discussion today is because of the deficit driven up by a tax bill, $1.9 trillion worth of debt, we were promised that tax bill would pay for itself. No one, not one economist except for an economist sitting in the White House believes that. And now we have an over $770 billion deficit this year, and it's going to be a trillion next year. And so we're digging a hole. My folks taught me when you're in a hole and want to get out, don't keep digging. So we're digging that deficit hole deeper, only to have the bait and switch of now we need to fix Social Security and Medicare. Guess what? We don't need to cut those programs. We don't need to take the money away from our seniors because we gave it to the wealthiest people in this country and the wealthiest corporations.
Representative Cramer.
Well, I hope we get to talk about the tax cuts bill later, but first of all, her math is a little bit off. She's complicating things by including the discretionary side of the budget with the mandatory side of the budget. As we speak, 29% of the budget is discretionary, and half of that is national defense, which should not be discretionary, by the way. On the mandatory side are the big drivers. We can't just pretend that everything's okay and not preserve them. I've never talked about privatizing Social Security, nor do I support cutting Social Security benefits. I'm talking about the revenue side. Usually Democrats love raising taxes on rich people. I'm talking about raising the cap from $130,000, which is roughly what it is today, to a higher number, and then indexing that cap so it's going up over the years to reflect the natural inflation, so that we can create a lot of money in the long term with small changes today. But if we wait till 2034, it's an automatic cut. So sticking your head in the sand pretending it's not an issue is going to result in automatic cuts.
Congressman Cramer, you didn't introduce one bill to eliminate or raise the cap. Not one bill. You've been there a long time. I wouldn't just raise it incrementally. I'd eliminate the cap. It's time that people, the wealthiest of the people in this country, it's time that the wealthiest people in this country pay the same percentage as the poorest people in this country. LeBron James actually meets his cap by the third minute in the first basketball game he plays. Wrong on so many levels. We have got to get things right in this country, and we've got to quit penalizing our middle-income people to the benefit of rich people, which is exactly what that cap does. But you have not introduced a bill that would have eliminated the cap. And I tried to get Mulvaney during our debate on his confirmation to admit that we need to raise the cap. He's the head of OMB. He took a pass on it. So don't assume that this administration anytime soon is going to agree to eliminate or raise the cap on Social Security. It won't happen. It'll only happen if good people in a bipartisan way come together to solve the problems of Social Security and Medicare.
Congressman, I'll give you another bite at the apple.
Well, my first question is, what's your bill number on doing that? So I know.
Well, I didn't say that. I wasn't the one saying that we hadn't done it.
So anyway...
I asked the administration to do it. I asked Mulvaney to do it. Well, okay. Why
first,
not?
Listen,
he's the head of OMB.
Well,
there should be no leadership from the White House, y'all, on fixing this. He walked away from it. What he wanted to do, what the president's head of OMB wanted to do, was raise the age to 70. I said, good luck to the oil field worker who's been working his whole life now knowing that he has to work to 70 to actually get his Social Security. That was his plan.
First of all, this is the first time you've brought up a possible solution. Because I've been raising the solution and have been recognized for it nationally because I am a Republican who's raising it. In fact, this is one of those issues where the president and I have quite publicly disagreed. I think we have to deal with it. The sooner we deal with it, the smaller the fix will have to be. If we wait till it's automatic, it's 25% cut. I don't want to see that happen. I'm more than happy to work across the aisle and across the Capitol to start work. But I think we have to put everything on the table, you guys. If you say this is a non-starter, then guess what? You do. You never start.
Well,
we have to deal with this. The sooner the better.
I will not put everything on the table. I will not put on the table cuts to our senior citizens who worked hard and earned this benefit. When you call them entitlements, and the words he used was mandatory, what he really means is entitlements. And I will not put any cut for our senior citizens on the table.
Okay, so mandatory is not an entitlement, okay? There's
lots of mandatory spending
that are not, quote, entitlements.
Be careful,
so she likes
Kevin.
To use these words. She likes to keep digging. I understand that. She's in Hail Mary mode right now. I get it. But
Please.
All right. They can use up my time. That's okay.
No.
Yeah. I mean...
Just very quickly, yes.
Are you saying you've never used the word entitlement, Kevin?
I don't know that I've never used the word entitlement. No. I've worked very hard not to refer to them as entitlements, and I can't think of one time during this campaign that I've used the word entitlement. But it doesn't matter what you... The point of the matter is it's mandatory spending, and we have to deal with it. If we don't deal with the income stream, we're going to have 25% cuts, and... Telling people that you're not going to touch Social Security is not a solution. But at least you've offered one tonight, just without a bill number.
Telling people that you're going to give them a $1.9 trillion tax cut and then laying Social Security and Medicare on the table for cuts, that is not a program that's going to work for our seniors. It's not a program that's going to work for our working men and women in this country and in this state. And we need to stand with the middle class, not the richest. And we need to solve this problem, yes. But we need to solve it in a way that does not hurt our seniors.
So speaking of the tax cuts, did anybody notice that we now had a 12-month GDP growth over 3%, something Barack Obama could never have accomplished? Do you notice that because of the tax cuts and Jobs Act, the number one cure to all of this is more people working? We have more people working at higher wages than any time in American history. Does anybody notice that we have the lowest unemployment rate we've had since in the last 49 years? That's all part of the formula. And the result of it has been that we've had the largest revenue income in the history of the country. That's how you solve a lot of these problems. But we also need to deal specifically with Social Security. So it's there for my mother and for Chris and me, for our children and our grandchildren. It's not a one election soundbite.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, what was the business investment growth third quarter this year?
3.5, or the business investment growth? I don't know, but the number
that's
one
that's a pretty
measure
important
GDP,
number, because that's a leading indicator of the economy.
It's actually not.
What was the business?
It's actually not.
Well, yeah, it is. Okay. Business investment growth. I mean, you know, what people are willing to put back into their business. What was the growth in third quarter? The report came out today. It was less than 1%. And so what we're seeing now is we're seeing a growth in the economy that is fueled by consumer spending, but not by underlying economics. And I'll tell you this, we're going to get to another issue. You know what the one of the primary reasons is? The tariffs and trade policy of this administration.
So we've had 12 months of over 3% gross domestic product growth. That is the number one economic indicator. And by the way, consumer spending is driving it. And guess what drives consumer spending? Consumers having more money. Guess how consumers have more money? The government takes less. Oh, and by the way, it creates more jobs. That's why we have both rocket ship economy and growing income for the government to spend on our priorities.
Consumer spending and government spending are driven right now by debt. We're a country that's being driven by debt, and that problem needs to get solved. And I'll let Dave ask a question because we've pretty much taken you out of the mix here.
Yeah.
Dave,
we
like you, so we want you back in.
He's loosening his tie.
Funny, it was ironic. That
you
was
don't
my
even
next
know which
question.
One of us
was about,
we got asked.
It was about the tax cuts.
Sure.
But my question following that has to do with tariffs. And Senator Heitkamp is first. The tariff policy can be argued that farmers are being hurt, perhaps because of the tariff policy and the trade war, if you want to call that. What needs to happen?
Dave, there's no argument. Farmers are getting hurt. And I'm going to fight for farmers. And I'm going to fight for doing the right thing for American and North Dakota agriculture. We are going to be short in our income and our revenue into this state in new wealth creation by about $1 billion. Because not only do we have tariffs on our soybeans, we can't sell them. We can't sell them, potentially losing that market forever. And I think it's interesting. Congressman Kramer's surrogate recently in CNN said farmers should be happy with the prices that they have right now. You talk to any farmer, they're not happy. They're nervous and they're concerned and they have great worry about whether they're gonna meet their expenses and be able to pay their operating loans. You know what, the expert that I think we should listen to, one that works right here at NDSU, who says we are in a black swan moment. We could lose our revenue for many, many years. And this is a policy that's failing our farmers and it's failing the American economy. It's failing American agriculture.
Congressman Kramer.
So this president plays hardball. There's no question about it. And by the way, many farmers I've talked to have said, why didn't the president do this a long time ago? Once again, we wouldn't have this dramatic situation if previous presidents would confront China's cheating in many areas. China subsidizes three crops, $100 billion more than WTO allows them to every year. That's seven years of American farm programs in total. If we continue down this path, they're going to eat our lunch as they've already started to do. But this president has demonstrated by his, you know, drawing lines in the sand that you're not allowed to cross, has brought Canada and Mexico, 88% of North Dakota's exports go to Canada and Mexico, brought them to the table and did a deal called the U.S.-Mexico-Canadian Agreement. He did a deal with South Korea. He now has the United Kingdom, the European Union, and Japan all in negotiations with him. In fact, China represents 1% of North Dakota's exports. Australia represents 2% of North Dakota's exports. And this is why I asked, realizing that we could get into a protracted trade war, this is why I was the first member of Congress to ask USDA to come up with a mitigation plan using the very funds that they're using to help our farmers in the short term as we work on markets. And we're going to go back and forth a little while. We'll have several one-minute opportunities, I suspect. Yeah.
Blind faith in this administration is not well-placed. The Chamber of Commerce knows that these tariffs are hurting us, that this trade war is hurting us. The Koch brothers know that this trade war is hurting us. And certainly our farmers know that this trade war is hurting us. I find it interesting that he raises the new NAFTA, I'll call it that. You know, I've been criticized by Congressman Kramer for bringing a trade delegation to the Mexican embassy. Guess who was the first group that actually agreed to a trade agreement? It was the Mexicans. I'd like to think that maybe reaching out to the Mexicans makes a difference. Congressman Kramer, the one provision we needed desperately in the new NAFTA from Canada, that one provision was grain grading reform. He almost cost us grain grading reform by rash and harsh statements against Canada. That's not a kind of senator who's going to help in fighting this against this trade policy. This is the kind of person who's blind loyalty to a president and to an administration will sell our farmers down the road. I cannot point to a spot where I feel stronger about how we need to have a unified voice here in North Dakota to protect our farmers against a trade war that literally could bankrupt thousands of our farmers. We need to stand with our farmers.
Congressman Kramer.
Senator, when these were proposed, I testified at two USTR hearings, and I didn't see you at either one of those hearings, by the way. But it is interesting that you point to a news story saying that I almost undid this grain grading thing by harsh comments when the sources were two unnamed Canadian sources familiar, and not even the ambassador would verify that story. On the other hand, it was the President of the United States right here in Fargo, North Dakota, who read directly from a postcard from Air Force One, written in my handwriting, and that's what brought the grain grading issue, not to the other side, to our side. And if you want to talk about unity, you want to end the trade war, unify behind the United States instead of China. Stand with us, and we'll end this trade war in a hurry. But you go over there and undermine our president's authority and our president's leverage,
Kevin.
If
you want to represent North Dakota, you better stand with North Dakota farmers.
Exactly.
You better stand with North Dakota agriculture.
Exactly.
You better stand. You better stand with our people. You better stand with our people against trade policies that are devastating family farmers here in this country. Against trade policies that are devastating our ag equipment manufacturers. Ford announcing lower profitability. Caterpillar announcing lower profitability. Why do you think the stock market has this level of volatility? This is dangerous policy. And if you can't, as a United States Senator, stand at a podium and protect and defend the people of this state against bad administration policies, then you don't belong in that job.
So standing with communist China in a trade war against the United States of America is not standing with North Dakota's farmers.
Oh, my goodness.
I had a roundtable discussion in here with soybean farmers from North Dakota with Senator Joni Ernst, one of your colleagues from a big soybean and corn producing state. Do you know I couldn't get one of them to oppose the tariffs? Not one of them. You know what they said? Well, this is why we have bins. This is why I sold that 10.50 a bushel.
If I had my phone here, I'd show you a picture of a mound of soybeans on the ground, in the rain, in Castleton.
Sure.
There are no bins, Kevin.
No.
Those beans will be wrecked by that rain. They'll be wrecked by the exposure to the elements.
Here's the other thing that's happened. We are now providing over half of the supply to a market that's half the size of China, but to the European Union. I was a signature on behalf of the United States Congress in a ceremony with Taiwan purchasing 30% more soybeans than they did last year. We are in the process in North Dakota of converting a refinery to use North Dakota and American soybeans to make oil products for California domestic markets. We need to continue to grow our markets, because guess what? China's not just going to roll over and give up just because, you know, you're on their side. They're not going to do it. We need to be on our side.
Do we need to grow markets? Absolutely, we need to grow markets. 70%, in fact, 98% of our markets gone. Gone this year. We haven't been able to move any soybeans out the Pacific Northwest. We came into this grow year, ladies and gentlemen, very fragile. We talked to bankers all the time in my office. We wondered if we were going to get operating loans. Guess what? You know how hard it's going to be next year when there is absolutely no dollars in their pocket and the trade aid has not come anywhere near to solve this problem. It is not going to, it's not going to put enough money in the pocket so that our farmers can farm next year. And that's the tragedy of where we are right now. And I will stand on this podium and I will argue against these failed trade policies. Incidentally, the latest report, Kevin, that came out of the economic analysis of last quarter, what do you think the exports were up?
You tell me.
Well, we are importing now over dramatically more than we were. No.
That's what
I'm telling you. Our exports are down and our imports are up. And you need to look at this. And you guys can laugh. You got to look at this data. This data is real. And since the trade war started, our trade deficit with China has exploded. So if this was designed to eliminate the trade deficit, it's not working.
Okay, this is clearly a long-term play, and that's what this president understands. You cannot turn around 30 years of bad trade policy in one season.
Kevin, so, why has the trade deficit gone up?
Your time will come, yeah. Senator, because this is a long-term deal. And by the way, with regard to deficits, I know the president likes to talk about trade deficits a lot, but you know why we're importing more than ever? Because people have more money than they've ever had. There's more jobs, higher incomes, rocket ship economy. That's why we're the consumers. And by the way, this is the leverage that this president understands. This country is 20% of the world's productivity. We are 20% of the world's consumption. Nobody wants to be outside of a trade deal outside of the United States for very long. He understands that leverage. He understands it. He's exercising it. But it's difficult when you have politicians from our country run into the other country to undermine his leverage while he's negotiating a better long-term deal for our farmers and everybody else.
United States of America is less than 5% of global population. Our greatest trade asset is our trade relationships with countries who aren't China. That's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This president took us out of that and made it virtually impossible for us to collaborate and build markets within that unit. He didn't try and renegotiate. He just said, we're out. That was the beginning of a very bad step in trying to curtail Chinese dominance in the Pacific. And it's also a bad national security strategy. And so there is a clear difference between Congressman Cramer and me on trade. You've heard it right here. You've heard a great debate. He is all in on the president, and I'm all in on North Dakota.
One more.
Sure. So with regard to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I was a vote for TPA. I was uncommitted on TPP, and the reality of it is Trade Promotion Authority, Trans-Pacific Partnership. The reality is TPP had no chance of passing either the House or the Senate. No chance. We had to start over and start dealing with Asian Rim populations, perhaps one at a time, two at a time, and this president has done that. He's finished the South Korean deal called CORUS. He is in negotiations with Japan. He's working even in other parts beyond the Asian Rim, working on deals with India. There are lots of markets out there, but you have to isolate China or they're going to continue to cheat on us and they're going to continue to build vessels and fighter jets and fake islands in the South China Sea. They're out to take over the world. This is not a trifling matter.
Yeah. And our greatest asset in all that is our trading partners that we walked away from. And you know what the first thing Japan said? When they said, we're going to negotiate a bilateral with you, Japan says agriculture is off the table. And that's the truth about trade. When you do multilateral deals, agriculture does better.
I'm almost scared to move on to the next subject, but I'd like to start with Congressman Cramer. Is man-made global warming a reality? Why or why not? And what should we do about it?
Clearly, the climate is changing. The climate has changed for thousands of years, millions of years, perhaps. What role does man play in that? I think it's pretty clear that over the cycle of time, we don't know enough about the history of the world to be sure whose fault it is. I don't know this, though. The country and the world wants us to solve this issue. They want us to deal with greenhouse gas emissions, and I think we ought to. And I think you're going to find you're going to find very little daylight between Senator Heitkamp and me on this. We have some of the greatest innovators in the world in energy policy right here in North Dakota. This is why another area where President Trump and I disagreed. I'm so sorry, Mr. President, but I did not support him getting out of the Paris Accord. I stood with Ivanka and Jared Kushner and with Rex Tillerson, and I was very public in my support for staying in Paris and helping solve the problem, not by eliminating fossil fuels, but by working through innovation and technology to create solutions that allow us to include these very precious resources that we have right here in North Dakota and throughout the United States.
You know, and Kevin, I want to applaud you for that. I think you and I both took the same position, that it's better to be in the deal than outside
of
the deal.
You had more friends than I did, though.
I did. I had more friends who agreed. Yeah. No, and I remember when you said that, I thought, that's exactly right. We can't do this alone, and we've got to recognize that we're going to live in a carbon-constrained world. And so I'm really proud, because I think the single climate legislation that actually got passed was a tax credit that I initiated called 45Q. Now, Kevin thinks that it only applies to one company in Houston. That's not true. In fact, one of the first users here may be an ethanol plant in Richardton. But what this does is it brings together people not to get into the climate debate, Dave, mm-hmm. not to have this discussion, because you aren't going to get agreement. I happen to think that climate is changing because we have a lot of people on this globe doing a lot of things that they haven't done in the past, and that is helping to change the climate. But we can solve this problem if we look at how we develop technologies. We literally, you guys, have machines that can pull CO2 out of the air. This is not fake. This is real, and there's real investment behind it. So we know in order to get our temperatures down, we absolutely need to do air capture of CO2. That's possible. It's possible when we innovate, as Kevin has said. But if you want to look at who actually got a piece of climate legislation done, I think that person's standing at this podium.
Congressman Brenner.
We have to be very careful to not kill the innovators before they come up with the solution, and we're on the brink. Senator Heitkamp's right. Section 45Q of the tax code provides a credit. The problem is that the definitions are not reconciled between the IRS and the DOE and the EPA, and our administration's currently working on doing exactly that so that it can be used by people who don't have that rather unique vertical integration of mineral rights and surface rights and pipelines and all those things. We need to do a lot more on it. I think we're all united on getting that done. But she also supported a candidate who she said would be the greatest president in the history of the world or some crazy thing like that, who wanted to end it all. That was her champion. She was a champion for Hillary Clinton. And if we'd have had, can you imagine 4 years of Hillary Clinton? Thank God this president saved coal and oil.
Senator Heitkamp?
All I can say is that it's interesting because Kevin always mentions other provisions that he wants passed. I'm in a minority in my body, the Senate. But yet I was able to get this initiative passed. Congressman Kramer is in the majority. We have a majority in the Senate. And those provisions that he says need to be complementary that he's advancing, they didn't pass. You've got to look at results. You've got to look at people who actually get things done. And I'm very proud of what we've done with 45Q. It has opened up an incredible discussion across the country on how we're going to innovate to take care of our CO2 problem.
Our next issue, we start with Senator Heitkamp. Veterans issues have become a pretty important topic in this race. Can each of you offer some clarity on how you stand on the issue?
Well, I just did a two-day tour with Secretary Hagel talking about veterans issues. And, you know, I grew up in a town of 90 people. My dad started the VFW Club. We knew what it meant to honor the flag, and we knew what it meant to honor our veterans. I took a poster around in these events showing that every brother and my dad put on a uniform and served their country. Almost all of my mother's brothers served their country. That's who I am. It's in my DNA. And I don't think Kevin and I disagree on how we respect and revere veterans. We've been at many, many joint events, whether it's send-offs or whether it is our annual Veterans Day events. But it's not enough. It's not enough to just attend an event. It's not enough to just show up on Veterans Day or Memorial Day. You've got to walk the walk, which means getting a clinic into Grand Forks. It means a vet center in Grand Forks, which I've done. It's getting a CBOC in Devil's Lake. It's making sure we listen to veterans. And I hear over and over and over again, and honor them by getting the medals that they earned that they didn't receive. It is not just about the macro issues. It's them knowing every day that they have someone sitting in the Senate who believes in what they've done and respects what they've done and will fight with for them as our first priority for legislation.
Congressman Cramer.
Well, I don't disagree with anything that Senator Heitkamp said, although it took all of us to get a lot of those things done, all of those things done for North Dakota, and at both a macro and a micro level. I'm very grateful, however, that we finally have a president who's with us on trying to provide more benefits for our veterans. He signed the VA Missions Act, which provides more clarity, streamlines the benefits, streamlines the infrastructure, as well as provides a greater clarity for VA choice. It's refreshing to be able to go to the Rose Garden for a bill signing that helps our veterans. But it's also more than just the veterans. It's about our active military as well. I'm grateful that we were able to get a cost of living adjustment in permanent law. I'm grateful that we were able to get the largest pay raise for our military men and women that they've had than what they've had in the last 10 years, a real commitment from an administration that joins the unified Congress in providing those benefits. But there's no question, Senator Heitkamp and I have been at many events together. In fact, it's some of the most fun we ever had is at these events because we tend to yuck
Maybe
it up on the stage
on
a little bit. You know, yeah, we pick on Hovind. Sorry, John, we pick on Hovind a little bit. Anyway, it's some of the most fun we've had together.
No, I you know, and I just want to compliment Kevin. He was one of the first of the honor flights. And anyone who has ever, and anyone who has ever been on an honor flight, anyone who has ever seen that, it's a special moment. It's a special moment when those World War II vets for the first time, or the Korean War vets for the first time, open up about their experience. And I'm proud of the work that I've done to honor our Vietnam vets. And this is something that should never be a partisan issue. We share equally our commitment to our veterans.
Congressman, anything further?
I'd just say it's not a partisan issue in North Dakota.
Okay, we've come down to about the end of the debate here, but I do have one other question. This is seen by a lot of people as going to be the most expensive political race in North Dakota history. Is there anything that Congress can do to kind of scale back on the money, to do better campaign disclosure, anything like that? I'll start with Congressman Cramer.
I'm glad you asked the question. The last part of the question, I think, is the answer. You talked about disclosure. And when we know that the Supreme Court has determined that contributions, donations, are a form of expression, and certainly they are, right? We all want to give money to the candidate that supports our position, which is why Senator Heitkamp has received $12.5 million in the last 17 days from the pro-abortion crowd. I understand that. But that's okay. That's okay. But...
We're down to 1 minute, so
okay.
I'll give her one more.
Shame on you.
I didn't do it.
You know, the question is about how do we fix it. I didn't make these rules. In fact, I don't support them. Congressman Cramer does. Buckley versus Vallejo, which says speech is money. Congressman Cramer says over and over again that free speech means money. That can't be our rule of law. When I was your attorney general, I fought against that. I fought against Citizens United. But when these are the rules of the game, this is what you do. And this is you don't unilaterally disarm. We can fix this, but we can only fix it as Supreme Court reverses Buckley versus Vallejo and Citizens United. And we need a constitutional amendment, in my opinion.
Thank you. And I have to stop it there. We've run out of time. Thank you both for participating. Thank the North Dakota Broadcasters Association for sponsoring it. Remember to vote.